Okay, welcome everyone to this session in our series, the Ditzel Journalism Focus Seminar Series, where we have the pleasure today to welcome Admira Meyer, who's a PhD with a background in diversity studies, studying Facebook and youth engagement. And today, Dr. Admira Meyer will present research from a forthcoming article in Digital Journalism and other projects he's doing. His presentation is called Analytics-Driven Journalism in Resource-Constrained Newsroom Contexts, Lessons from Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Kenya. And this feeds into the advancing of the field into how analytics and metrics are being utilized in contemporary newsrooms, and also more broadly speaking into what some scholars, such as Matt Carlson, has discussed as measurable journalism. He's visiting us this week at Oslo Met for a conference on safety for journalism, but we're also very pleased that he takes the opportunity to represent Namibia University of Science and Technology from making his presentation for us here in the research group. So with that, we welcome you here.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, Oscar, for that introduction. I want to welcome you all. I know it's not a big audience, which is good for me. At least I can say all kinds of things that I want to say. But I just want to thank you for the opportunity. Again, Roy and Christine, for bringing us here to Oslo. It's always good to see that North and Global South interaction, which is very key in terms of forging collaborative research projects going forward. Having said that, I just want to say that this particular project that I'm trying to present here is a project that I've been doing with Dumisani Moyo and also Trust Matsilele, who are based at the University of Johannesburg. We started this project while I was still affiliated with the University of Johannesburg. I've since moved on, but I still have got in an affiliation with the University of Johannesburg. So it's a project that we are doing, and it's a project that just continues to gather more steam because we are looking at ramping it up into other newsrooms beyond Zimbabwe, Kenya, and South Africa, and look at other newsrooms that we really didn't look at in this particular study that I'm going to present here. So as Oscar has already pointed out, the title of this talk is pretty much analytics-driven journalism. We try to argue in this paper that in as much as what we are pretty much seeing is what we would call an analytics-driven kind of journalism, where analytics shape and reconfigure news values, but also reconfigure the way how news actually is produced and packaged and then distributed. So our argument in this paper pretty much is that we are seeing a new kind of journalism, and that kind of journalism that we are seeing somehow revises what we usually call the public interest. It revises that, and it subverts it, and it brings a new kind of public understanding that we need to problematize and understand if we are to understand what really is happening in journalism these days. So basically, the outline of this presentation is as follows. I'll try and just briefly talk about the literature context, what has been written about, and where we are in terms of understanding the role of analytics in newsrooms. And also, I'll also go on to talk about the research context in terms of what is it that is happening in African newsrooms, the Zimbabwean setup, Kenya, South Africa, what is really happening, what has really changed, and where do we see analytics actually fitting into that broader context. And then I'll try and look at the theoretical issues that also informs this kind of research. I'll also talk about methods, data collection, and then I'll present to you some kind of key findings that we see that we can also learn from what is pretty much happening. Then I'll try and conclude. So I hope to do that in less than 1 hour, actually. So I think we have more time to engage. So basically, the issue around analytics is not something that has been written about a lot, especially in the African context. Most of the time, we've seen most of the researchers are coming from the global north, Carlson. We have also seen Zamit. They have written a lot about these issues around analytics, that now we are seeing a change in terms of how news is actually produced, how news is actually packaged, because as a result of trying to understand the whole notion of production and distribution of content. So what we are also seeing is that newsrooms are not only just relying on traditional kinds of audience studies. You remember before the analytics, you know, we'd commission a market research company to do audience studies for you so that you understand really what is happening in terms of your audiences. But now the newsrooms have got all those tools within their own newsrooms. So they're pretty much doing their own audience analysis. And it's being done at a level that is, some would say it's consumer surveillance. Some would say that because ultimately it's very subtle because we don't really know what's really happening because they have all these tools to look at what is actually happening on their pages. So in essence, we are pretty much saying there is a revision in terms of the traditional audience studies that we have seen as a result of these online or analytic tools that we are seeing. And again, in Africa, as I've already pointed out, there is little that has really been written about. I can only talk about Bones, 2015 and 2017. I think she's the only one who's really problematized this context, but ultimately she was focusing on the Reuters Bureau based in Kenya. She was not really focusing on African newsroom. So our paper, in essence, is one of the first to actually look at what really happens in an African newsroom context where we have got limited resources in terms of technological development adoption, but also you don't really have so many people with the skills to actually develop these apps. So what kind of a context really do you then find analytics in that kind of an environment? So what pretty much analytics is about, you know, the granular measurement of news products. Really, it's about measuring these things in a more refined way than what we used to see with the traditional audience studies. You're pretty much measuring how somebody actually gets to read the story. What kind of a gadget that does he use? How many minutes he or she engages with that kind of content? And that is very subtle in many ways, but it allows newspapers to actually understand what kind of content is good for publication, or what kind of content is needed by the public. So ultimately, it's no longer about what is in the public interest, but what interests and what the public wants. Essentially, that's what basically you end up having. Because you are pretty much tracking what really do they really want to consume, and at what level do they, using which kinds of gadgets do they want to consume it. And when you have that kind of a relationship going on, it means ultimately the relationship between the producer of the content and the consumer of the content somehow is reconfigured. So, as Oscar has already pointed out, Carlson has argued that we need to talk about this context as what he calls measurable journalism, because pretty much you're allowing us to measure so many things in terms of views, you know, in terms of how to consume news, what kind of content you want to consume, you know, all these kinds of things. So his argument is that we need to talk about what he calls measurable journalism. But for me, I argue that this has got very major, a lot of impact in terms of the production of content, the distribution of content, the consumption of content, even the business model that you ultimately have online is ultimately going to be influenced by these analytic tools. Ultimately, because ultimately if you go for the clickbaiting business model, it means already you are doing something totally different from the one that we used to know before these analytic tools came into being. So ultimately, we are seeing a reconfiguration in terms of the distribution, the business model of journalism, especially online. I don't want to bore you much with this kind of context. Let me just try and move a bit further. This thing has also been written about by the Reuters Institute of Journalism. They've also written about analytic tools, especially in the last couple of years. They've really talked about it at length. And they've got this typology that they have where they are saying some newsrooms tend to focus on what they call rudimentary, some just focus on what they call generic, and some are focused on very refined editorial metrics. So they are trying to come up with these typologies to understand really how do different newsrooms ultimately appropriate these kind of analytic tools in their newsrooms. So ultimately the argument then is that we are seeing what is called the analytic turn in journalism. Journalism has turned a corner, and now it's more about analytics, it's more about the big data. And ultimately, and I know when we talk about big data, it's as if finally we are going back to that era of the objectivity where you can actually say we can actually trap reality and find it. But for me, I have problems with that because ultimately the myth around the big data is that it hides a lot of things. It hides the biases that are inherent, especially in algorithms. It hides a lot in terms of what even analytics don't tell us, which it also hides. Because remember, these are also technologies that are also designed by human beings. So again, if we are going to say we want to have a big data-oriented kinds of decisions, ultimately there are certain biases that we are going to build into the decision-making system or process that we are going to advance. And ultimately, this is where we are. Big data has become a big thing. It has become a big industry. Lots of analytic tools and analytic companies that have also come on board as a result of that. But I will not really talk about that. I just want to flag that as I proceed. So let me just talk about the research context. Pretty much, we are focusing on two Southern African countries, Zimbabwe and South Africa, and also one East African. And basically why we chose these countries, it was because if you look at what is really happening in terms of the digital media environment in Africa, those three are pretty much in the top 10, pretty much. Of course, you can add probably Nigeria is also part of that equation. But pretty much it's, most of the startups are actually happening in Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Kenya. And in Kenya, it has gone to a higher level, of course, because of the funding around coming from Facebook and also coming from Google. So they've got a lot of money in terms of pushing the uptake of apps and also the refinement of big data projects, especially in Africa. So basically, we were trying to look at these three countries and say, because these countries, again, if you look at mobile payment platforms like M-Pesa, EcoCash, they're also at the forefront. So they're also at the forefront of actually pushing products that are actually having a mass adoption across the continent, also within their own country. So we thought this could actually give us a better platform actually to understand what is really happening. And again, we've also seen a massive growth in terms of online consumption of news, especially via mobile phones. For example, in Zimbabwe, there's what is called Mobi News, where you pretty much sell news, but you package it as an SMS. So people actually subscribe to that. And from research that we're currently doing, we have realized that it's actually a very successful model. I don't know how sustainable it is going forward, but we are seeing lots of actually newsrooms actually taking up that is a model that they're going to build going forward, because they feel that people prefer to get their news via mobile platforms as compared to actually buying a physical newspaper. So that is also a very interesting thing that is actually happening within the Zimbabwean context. So again, in terms of the statistics, I think you can actually see there that Zimbabwe and South Africa also in terms of even internet penetration rates, they are also, South Africa is about 53%, Zimbabwe is almost about 40.2%. Internet penetration. Facebook, again, talking about almost 1 million in Zimbabwe. In South Africa, we are talking about almost 16 million. So in terms of uptake of social media platforms, again, these countries are also doing it at a higher level compared to other countries. Again, if you look at what is also happening in Kenya, we are talking about almost 43% of internet users and also almost like 7 million people that are on Facebook. And this data that I'm presenting is coming from Internet World Stats. And of course, I know this can also be challenged. I know in Zimbabwe, actually, the recent data set actually says that actually we have got almost like 3 million people on Facebook and we're actually way beyond 7 million on WhatsApp. So again, that tells you a lot in terms of what is really happening in terms of the uptake of social media platforms and in a context like Zimbabwe. So what were the research questions that we were trying to grapple with in terms of this particular study? Basically, we were trying to understand if and how online editors and journalists have incorporated editorial metrics into their daily news work. Basically, that's what we wanted to understand in these three countries. We wanted to understand how have they incorporated these metrics in a way that they can shape their news work. So pretty much three objectives that followed as a result of that. We wanted to investigate how analytics are used for editorial decision-making purposes. We also wanted to understand the culture of analytics, how the culture of analytics was actually shaping the evaluation of impact, reach, relevance of news stories. We also wanted to understand and examine how analytics were influencing the performance. And remember, what is also very interesting about the performance of journalists, now If you are a social media manager in a newsroom, your performance and your pay is tied much, very much to the kind of engagement that you can actually generate for the company. So ultimately, at the end of the day, we are also seeing the changes that this incorporation of analytics is actually doing. Because ultimately, you no longer just say, I'm here because, you know, I've got a job title, I also got a job description. But beyond your job description actually ultimately says you must be able to ensure that we've got more engagement, especially on social media. So ultimately, promotion and demotion is ultimately going to be tied to this kind of analytic tools. So in terms of theoretical understandings, our paper argues that in as much as we may want to try and use the sociology of news approach or a theory to understand this, we need to go beyond this, because ultimately what we are realizing is that technological factors are increasingly shaping and increasingly impacting the way how news is produced, distributed, and disseminated. And ultimately, our theories need to reflect that. Our theories need to be revised to be able to capture the nuances that comes with actually putting technology at the center. Because remember, the sociology of news approach, especially the one that was advanced by McLean, only talks about political, economic, cultural, and social factors. And where is technology in that? And that's another thing that we are saying. We need to have a revised kind of a sociology of news approach, which incorporates sociology of online news production, and so that we can be able to understand these kinds of things that actually happen. For example, algorithms are very, very key in what is actually happening in the newsrooms. Bots are also very key in terms of what is happening in the news. So we need to understand all these so that we understand the role of external factors in the decision-making that actually happens in newsrooms. Okay, so in terms of the case studies that I'm trying to dealt with in this particular study, in each country we targeted two major news groups. So in Kenya we're looking at the Standard Media Group, and the Nation Media Group. In Zimbabwe we looked at Zim Papers and AMH, which is Alpha Media Holdings, and in South Africa we looked at Tiso Black Star and also CNBC Africa. So basically we're looking at newsroom. We were looking at media groups rather than looking at specific newspapers, because our understanding was that mostly online editors or even online editors are usually group online editors rather than just a newspaper. A newspaper on its own doesn't really have an online editor. It just has a group editor who's the overall person who really runs this operation. So we try to look at the media as a holding company rather than just to look at a particular newspaper. So in terms of our methods, as I said, it's an ongoing study, but basically the paper that we're trying to present here, we did about 2021 in-depth interviews with our digital online editors and journalists in South Africa, Zimbabwe, and also in Kenya, to understand really what really they are really doing in terms of incorporating this particular analytics. So let me just try and present the findings there, because I just want to make sure that we foreground the findings more than focusing on any other things. So what we have realized is that, yes, there is a widespread use of analytics in all these six media holding companies that I'm trying to talk about here. But ultimately, what is also very interesting about the widespread use, which is very fascinating to us, is that most of the analytic tools that are being used, they are all coming from the West, or they are coming from the global north. And because, again, it comes to the fact that most newsrooms don't have app developers. They don't even have data scientists within them. So they don't really understand this. And when they bring these analytic tools, they just get somebody to come and do a one-day training on how to use them, and then they just run with them. And so there's no contextualization. There's no effort to actually make sure that they speak to the context in which they actually operate. And again, that creates serious, serious problems for us, because ultimately it's another modernization of newsrooms. It's another form of modernization of newsrooms, but again, a form of modernization which somehow is devoid of understanding the context in which we are operating, which is ultimately different from what happens probably in the global north or what happens in most developed countries. So ultimately, there we have got serious problems in terms of how do we move forward with analytics if we are just buying them or just becoming part of the band, but we don't know how to make sure that they become part of our everyday life somehow. So again, we saw a heavy use of Google Analytics. Why somebody would ask why are they using Google Analytics? Ultimately, because they are all dependent on Google AdSense. They want to make money. They want to make sure that they are part of the business model that Google is trying to build around. So you would see that most of them are really using Google Analytics. And again, there is also the use of ChatBeat. Content Insights is also another one that they use. They also use Facebook Insights. They also use Echo Box. They also use Alexa. They also use what is called Brightcove and Discuss. These are some of the analytics that they are trying to use. But if you look at them, their origins, they are all coming from somewhere. There is no effort to make sure that you come up with. For example, if we talk about Orphan and Lantern, that were all produced and developed by newsrooms within the global, for example, The Guardian. They were pioneers of Orphan. So ultimately, that's one thing that we are failing to get in the African context, where a newsroom or a media group comes up with its own context-specific analytic tool so that it understands its audiences. But mostly they are dependent on getting analytic tools that are coming from. I'm not saying that's bad, but in terms of understanding the context somehow, I think there are certain nuances that are missed along the way in terms of doing that. And then the other thing that we are also seeing is that so again, for those who have not seen what the Facebook Insight pretty much does, it does the following the following things, really. That's the kind of data that you can actually get from Facebook Facebook Insights. It gives you an overview of how your page is actually doing, likes, reach, page views, actions on page, posts, events, videos, who watches your video, for how long, you know, that kind of. Those are the kinds of data that you get when you use Facebook Insights to understand pretty much your social media engagement. And then if we are looking at ChatBeat does the pretty much the same, but again, as I said, it's all about quantitative data. So there's little that you get in terms of qualitative data. So ultimately, where we are being pushed with this kind of appropriation of analytics, that we just have to appropriate big data and then we sideline thick data along the way, which is somehow also very, very, very problematic, that I would argue. And again, if you look at Google Analytics, again, it does the following things, pretty much the same as ChatBeat, but again, it's more about being connected to Google AdSense. So we argue in this paper ultimately that we are seeing what is called an analytics-driven journalism. Journalism ultimately is now increasingly being we are more worried about online audiences rather than what happens offline, and that is where the problem is. Because ultimately, in a context like Africa, where the statistics already show that 40%, what happens to the 60%? If you focus on what the 40% want to read, what about the 60%? And ultimately, that kind of journalism that you are producing has got certain kinds of problems, ultimately, in terms of dealing with the real bread and butter issues that 60% of people actually facing on a daily basis. But so that's the problem that we are also trying to grapple with in this paper. And again, we have realized that there is this push for clickbait. And clickbaiting in the online landscape in Africa has become a big issue, actually. Recently, we woke up to a big headline in Zimbabwe, for example, where there's a player by the name Nyasha Mushekwi. He plays for some team in China. So we just woke up on one online one page and says Mushekwi to join Mushekwi to sign for Real Madrid. And when you open the story, you realize that no, Mushekwi is actually going to go to Real to Madrid for an operation, because they're currently and that's basically the kind of news that you are getting online, where you're trying to make sure that people click as much as possible so that you get money from Google. And that kind of a business model, ultimately, in an environment where we are talking about misinformation, disinformation, fake news, it's really not good at all. It's not really a solid business model to actually push. And again, we also say that has ultimately contributed to this culture of clickbaiting. It's again around analytics. How many people are clicking on my story? How many people are coming on our page? So it's about that. The battle is about the eyeballs. How many people get the most eyeballs so that they can get a lot of money from Google? And that ultimately, again, we are saying, it defeats the whole notion about public interest journalism, if we are to talk about it in this era. And again, the other issue that we also talk about, which is very interesting, really, is that we are also seeing the reconfiguration of the newsroom as we know it. Because, for example, one of the media organizations that we researched on, Alpha Media Holdings, by the time that we were doing interviews on this particular, they moved from a very plushy, plushy kind of an environment where they are, where they were based, and they went to a manufacturing, one of those backyard manufacturing, plants, and they just opened a news hub there. So now journalism is no longer about saying we need all good offices, fancy offices and what, but we are seeing journalism becoming a very industrialized news product where you just like manufacturing companies, you also need huge manufacturing plants where people just sit in a huge conveyor belt where you just pretty much produce news. So again, that is also reconfiguring in terms of how, and again, from based on that, if you also read this quote that I have here, which we got from Tiso Blackstar Media Group. He says, we have screens all over where journalists can track. So if you go into newsroom nowadays, you see throughout the walls of, it's all these screens where you are being shown how your story is performing, which story is doing well, which story is not doing well. So if they realize that there's a story which is not doing well, they just remove it out of their website, and then they put stories that they think people are interested in. So ultimately, you spend the whole day trying to tweak headlines, you tweak the lead, you tweet pretty much almost everything online because it allows you, because of the soft copy of it, it allows you to do that. So you just make sure you check really what is happening in terms of the performance of your stories, and you change. And again, that also changes how journalism really, because remember, in the old, once you print, you have printed, it is gone. So you can't follow and say, no, we feel that people are not really interested in building the story, so we want to cross it out, and then we want to print another one. You don't do that, but online, you have that latitude to do that, and that presents a very difficult way in terms of which our journalism really is actually being practiced. Again, there's this other quotation, again, which we also got from CNBC, where somebody is saying, analytics have helped us to understand the kind of users we have as a business channel. Through analytics, we've realized our followers like political stories, and that is influencing our content strategy. So ultimately, content strategy, again, is being influenced. Because remember, CNBC Africa is pretty much a business channel. But now they've realized that whenever they put political stories, especially political stories on Zimbabwe, they realize that there's a huge fan base that really follow the story. So ultimately, they also bring politics into their content. So again, this is also helping them to shift, what essentially they used to do in terms of the content that they wanted to produce. And again, if you also see this quote that I got from Nation Media Group, stories that perform well online are sometimes a pointer to a reporting gap or a specific interest that could be seasonal or evergreen. We use data from such stories to discuss story angles, day two approaches for the paper the following day. The data is also crucial in determining which stories need a rethink, which ones need better presentation next time. Does it need a video, an extra photo, perhaps, and which ones should never have touched in the first place? So ultimately, they are using this kind of analytics data to shape what ultimately we see on the news, essentially. And that creates, again, serious problems in terms of the kind of journalism that ultimately we consume. And then in terms of measuring journalistic performance, we also realize that in as much as not all newsrooms have started actually to measure performance, but some, for example, at CNBC, already the social media manager there and the multimedia online editor was telling us that they work on commission basis. It's not really, it's commission. So the more engagement rates that you generate, the more money you get. So if you don't bring a lot in terms of engagement rates, it means you're also not going to get a lot of money. So ultimately, performance and also demotion and promotion are going to be linked to this kind of use of analytics, which is also a very very interesting, we would argue. And also we argue that ultimately going forward, if this trend is going to continue, the salaries of journalists also is going to be linked to this. Because if you write stories that don't really do well online and people don't want to read them, people are ultimately, the editor is going to say, so you, what's your role? You are not bringing clicks. You are not generating a lot of traction and views. So what's your role in the newsroom? So ultimately we are saying the salary and the promotion of journalists ultimately is going to be linked to this kind of setup, which ultimately again presents serious serious problems for resource-constrained newsroom context. And also again, the other issue that we also found, which is also very interesting, is that the use of analytics is also making sure that the gap between editorial content or journalists and advertising departments is collapsing somehow. Because ultimately, journalists must know what kind of content markets the newspaper. So pretty much journalists is almost like a marketing officer. Because ultimately, you must also be able to market your own stories on social media. So you see a lot of journalists in Africa, whenever they are posting on social media or what, they are posting about their own stories that they have written. So it's also a way of making sure that they market their own stories. So it's no longer that gap between marketing or the sales and marketing and journalism is also shrinking along the way. Because ultimately you must also be very, you must be prepared to market your own stories and make sure that the newspaper actually gets more clicks and more views on their website, which is also very, very, very interesting. I'll probably skip this and move on to... And again, there's something that we also realized, which is very, very funny in terms of headlines. Headlines make or break stories, especially online. So again, the issue around clickbaiting, that's where it comes in. Because if you don't get the right kind of headline, ultimately, you are may not likely to get as many people clicking on the story. You may not have as many people actually viewing the story. So ultimately, because of that, you may not ultimately be able to generate a lot of money out of your online content. So again, headlines become the battleground through which newsrooms try to make sure that they do as much as possible. So again, the issue again here is about make sure that you tweak, continuously tweak. So, for example, you can probably see a headline in the morning saying Mugabe is sick, and then probably they realize that after 5 hours of that headline, people are still not clicking on it, and then they will go back to it and try and massage it a bit and bring another angle to it, and then they say probably Mugabe, you know, taken to Singapore, you know, and then probably again they will say, ah, now okay, so many people are now clicking on it. So there's that continuous change in terms of trying to make sure that you get a headline that allows people to click on it. And again, so we are arguing that there's this trend where it's about sexy headlines that are clickable, headlines that can actually, you know, allow people to generate a lot of traffic, which ultimately is not really in the public interest in most cases ultimately. Let me just read this quotation. Headlines by journalistic standards should always be catchy. This is the general standard across platforms. Arguably, for online, they then should be much better than print, since it takes real-time costing to browse a web-based site and download an app from the internet. So a headline should always be catchy enough to save audiences money and time. So it's all about that. Making sure that, because people are coming in there, when they come in on your site, they are using their data, they are using their money. So ultimately, they want something that is really, so it's about making sure that the headline is catchy. It's also very very appealing to the consumer. Let me just try and conclude this in essence, basically, to say, so what is really happening and where should we go from here? The argument that we are trying to advance in this particular paper is that in as much as analytics just like any other digital technologies, are a good thing in the newsroom, they are also bringing very negative, we would argue. Inasmuch as they are positive that they are bringing, but they are also bringing so many negatives in terms of subverting the public interest argument around journalism. They are creating something else. I don't know what to call it, whether to call it journalism that interests the public or what, but ultimately they are subverting the whole notion around public interest. That's the argument that we are trying to raise in this particular paper. And again, we are arguing that if we follow online data that comes with this big data analysis, we are going to lose what actually happens offline, because in Africa, most people is still interpersonal communication. The way how we get content, how we get information, how we get news, is pretty much offline. So if we focus on what happens online and we build that as a content strategy that we are going to have as media organizations, ultimately we are missing out, and we are also creating a blind spot that ultimately mean that most of the people that don't have access to the internet cannot consume what they want and what really is in their interest. Ultimately, that's the argument that we are trying to raise with this particular paper. The other issue that we also raise is that we caution against glorifying these analytic tools as tools that are going to ultimately give us a better understanding of who the audience is. Because ultimately, you cannot understand the audience only online and then miss the dimension that happens offline. So ultimately, in as much as you glorify that, ultimately now we've got an objective measurement of audiences, I think we are also building a very difficult and a very different kind of understanding of what journalism is all about. So going forward, we argue that we need to understand both offline and online data about audiences so that we can be able to understand our audiences. If ultimately the goal is to understand audiences, we need to understand both worlds rather than focus on what happens online, because ultimately there is a blind spot that is being created there. So with that having been said and done, I just want to thank you for your attention, and it's been great being here. Thank you so much.
Open for comments then.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was wondering, are they also measuring, which I know we are doing more and more, not only if they click, but how long, how much time do they use on each page or story?
Yeah, that's what they are essentially doing. They're doing all that kind of thing, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a very important question that Elizabeth is raising there, because that has been changed in Norway and I think in a few other countries too. That from the clickbait, which is still very much there, people are now also interested in how much time the audience spends. And we've seen a certain shift from only clicks towards quality of the content, which is actually good for news for those of us to read and
exactly.
I also wanted to thank you, Admire. This is really thought-provoking and very interesting, and I was especially happy to hear that Andrew Trendle with Ali Wayo is it's very nice. I find there are lots of interesting things to discuss here, but it seems that you are pessimistic. It seems to me that you are subscribing to a view rather in line of some sort of technological determinism. So my first question is it possible to see that these big data, these editorial metrics could be used also for good quality journalism and for the good, the public good, as you mentioned?
Yes, I would believe that it's not only for the bad that, of course, baiting, fake news, and all these kind of things. We can actually use this actually to come up with really amazing quality journalism. But my problem, especially in the African context, is that because most of these things are imported, and also we don't have the skills to actually do that. So ultimately, the bad ultimately usually is the one that takes over rather than the good, because people that are driving even the whole thing don't really understand really where they're going. So they'll probably just go for the things that probably allow them to make more money. So that's why I'm saying the battle is about eyeballs, not really about really. So how can we harness this big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, technology, to actually make sure that we've got better quality journalism? I'm not seeing that at the moment. I'm not seeing that. That's really concerning for me to say. So where we go from here, if we're just focusing on making sure that we've got more clicks, we've got more money from Google, so what after that?
Yeah, because if you know more about the audience, you could also know how to reach them for important information, for all the public goods that journalism in a democratic perspective is supposed to do. And that balance between the commercial interests and the more democratic interests have always been there. So I think that to be inspired of, you mentioned the sociology of news, is important here as well, because the context, the level of freedom of speech, as you said, how many people live in rural areas, urban areas, the fact that South Africa is a country in the world with the biggest difference between rich people and poor people. So these are all problematics that now take a new turn because of the new technology.
Thank you a lot. This was most enlightening and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I was particularly interested in what you said about technology. I'm all for technological determinism. I'm all for that. It's only a question about defining determinism. But that's a different debate. And my question relates to financing. Because it seems that it's about financing good journalism. That's a key question. How to finance good journalism in the future. And as I understand the economy and the world today, the biggest companies nowadays, they are Google, Facebook, and they are the biggest companies now, most successful, not because they produce technology, but because they know a lot about us. They know so much about us, and the real value is in knowing things about people. So my question is that when these news outlets are using Google Analytics or Facebook Insight or whatever, are the information also going to Facebook and Google? Because it seems that when newspapers in Europe are cooperating with Google or Facebook, most of the money ends up with Google or Facebook. Is this just another drain of resources
I would believe that that's the same thing that pretty much happens in Africa, where you just end up. And I think that's why most of the newsrooms wanted to join, you know, the Facebook instant articles feature, where you become part of Facebook and then you get probably more some money from Facebook. But most of them wanted to. But I think later on they realized that if they got in there, ultimately, they're going to be trapped in there, and then they would not be able to come out, because ultimately, most of their content would actually be part of Facebook. And instead of sending people to your website, you are sending people to Facebook, and Facebook ends up having more and more money, and that becomes a problem. And most of the newsrooms in Africa shied away from joining that. And I think it was just because they were also being cautious about really what was really happening. But also, I think, right now, it seems as if they are very comfortable with Google AdSense, and I think that's most of their business model is built around that. Google AdSense. That's where everything revolves around. More clicks. Make sure that you. So they talk about digital first strategy. So everything, you break everything on digital, and people just jump in there and click and what, and then you get lots of traction. You get more money from Google. So basically, that's the model that they are trying to. But how sustainable it is going forward, I simply don't know, because I think it has got its own problems going forward. Because unless, probably, of course, we know most of the media enterprises in Africa are owned by governments or people connected to the government. So ultimately, there's all these subsidies that always, so it subsidizes very shoddy, bad journalism because they've got the money.
Can I follow up on that?
Yeah.
Seems like most of the technologies are being deployed, not being developed in the African context. Do you know if there's anything going on? Would there be any indigenous technologies? In Africa, you talk about indigenous knowledge. Perhaps you need to talk about
indigenous technologies. That'll be interesting. But I think in Kenya, we are likely to see that. Whether it is going to be adopted by newsrooms, I don't really. But for me, I think my argument probably is that we probably need newsrooms to finance their own development of their own. I think that's where probably we are likely to see more benefits. But if we are just going to say some startups just going to come up with an app and then try to scale it, I don't see it being adopted. I don't see it really. We have tried. We've talked about Usha Yedi and all this, but we have seen that they just gained traction in the first few years, and where are they now? They're nowhere to be seen. So I think ultimately newsrooms have to devise their own ways of coming up with their own technologies that speak to their own context, and then that allow them to push certain kind of journalism that they want to push. That's where I see more likely results coming from. Yes.
And I think in that discussion it could be inspired by Gerald Balulia, who was here from Uganda, and his PhD thesis, which is called Hybrid Journalism.
Okay.
And it really discusses the content of journalism, but how some of these models, ideals made in the global north or west or whatever, are they work with them and they twist them and they use them, but they use them in localized way.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's possible to think in similar lines when it comes to technology. I was also very interested when you said in the introduction that there are always human beings behind. And I think that is
cool.
It's key here.
Yeah,
and we know that, for instance, only like 5% of the people making these systems are women. So if you put that into an African perspective, how many people are African? And that's this very necessary part of creating these very powerful tools.
Yeah.
It's along those lines,
it
could be very interesting to
follow
the discussion.
Mm. I'm actually a law student.
Oh, great.
Great. Thank you for a very interesting presentation. You mentioned at the beginning and also in the middle of the presentation that analytics is generally welcomed in the newsrooms. I'm just wondering whether there are any differences in opinions among the journalists when it comes to using analytics that are worth discussing further. Were there any tensions? Were there any different views.
And it's also one thing that I just didn't to talk about. It is also one thing that also came out in terms of our interviews, that people in the newsrooms are also resisting some of the use of these things, because ultimately when they are then used to talk about promotion and demotion, then already it raises some very difficult issues in the newsroom context. So ultimately, yes, there is some kind of resistance, but ultimately we are seeing you know, online editors becoming more powerful than editors, than content editors that we used to know. Because ultimately, people are saying, no, we want to make money. So they listen more to the people that have strategies for the media enterprise to make more money than somebody who just wants to say, I just want to get this story to become part of the content. So ultimately, because of that, we have powerful online editors and very weak news editors. That also creates problems. That creates really problems. But ultimately, there is resistance. Honestly, there is resistance in some spaces. But ultimately, it's very passive resistance. You just go about it and say, well, probably you just ignore it and just move on like that.
Well, about making money. So I guess, for instance, I know that Kenya has big media houses and they are buying up media houses in the neighboring countries. So they must be making money. And it's not what you have been looking at here, but maybe you know. So are they, and where are the money coming from? Is it from the online, or is it from more traditional part of the media houses? Do you know that?
It seems as if it's a combination of offline and online content, obviously, generating all this. But ultimately, more money, even if it was not really part of our research, what we have realized is that the traditional advertising model, it's really dying down. So there's more money that is actually coming from digital subscription, digital adverts. That's where money is right now. And ultimately, because again, Kenya is a trendsetter in terms of what happens in East Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and all these things. Ultimately, there is lots of money to be made in these countries, because ultimately they are also generating a lot of people that are also going online, and also people that are consuming online content. So there's a lot of money that is actually been, especially if we look at the Nation Media Group, I think Nation Media has really become a media conglomerate which really transcends just borders, but also going into East Africa, and even I think it's thinking of actually going beyond East Africa actually with the way we are growing.
If I can add another question. There's an issue here relating to trust, of course. The story you told us about Real Madrid, the footballer traveling to Madrid, reminds me of the story of the boy who cried wolf. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
So there might be a difference in between what in the short run would generate peaks and money, and what in the long run would be beneficial for the journalist. So it would be really, really interesting, fascinating to have a study where you follow over time the development to see which outlets really makes money in the long run.
Yeah, that's true. I think that is very, very fascinating. I've been trying to follow that kind of, especially in Zimbabwean context. That's where I've really been seeing this kind of click journalism, really clickbaiting journalism, going, to very, 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 the way how it is. Of course, most of the people that really run these kinds of platforms are based in the diaspora, some of them. So for them, it's just one of those things. They don't worry about the trust and sustainability. It's about survival now, while this Zimbabwean crisis is being resolved. So it's pretty much that. If the way how I've seen it, it's pretty much that. Those people have been named, shamed, and all that, but they still continue to do it. So what really drives that? And again, last year I was supervising one student at Wits University. She did a very amazing research around fake news. We found a Zimbabwean guy based in South Africa who actually runs a very successful fake news production company. It's got an online website, makes lots of money, uses that money to fund a real news website in Zimbabwe. So it's those kinds of things. Those paradoxes that you see. But that's basically what is happening. The guy is making lots of money. Lots of money in South Africa, because remember, fake news is around sex scandals of celebrities and all this kind of. So South Africa's got lots of people online, and also the appetite for consuming that kind of content is just huge. So he makes a lot of money, but he uses that money to proper journalism.
I think that's niche.
That's
only
normal.
Someone should explore that.
And it's true, in South Africa they have this long tradition for the tabloid paper pages, focusing on zombie and zombie sex and these things.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There might be a market there.
Yeah, the market is there. It's huge. It's a huge market, actually.
Thank you. I was curious to learn from your exciting presentation here and follow up on the discussion on analytic infrastructures that they are usually depending on third parties like Google Analytics Facebook services. I assume they also work with Crowdtangle.
Crowdtangle.
Are you aware of any of these news organizations in the works of developing their own analytics infrastructures?
They say they don't have the capacity, and as much as they would want, but the capacity is not there. The capacity is an issue.
Yeah. And have you heard anything about them partnering with such companies like from Norway, where Schibsted have been working on such infrastructures, or Swedish companies or other companies which have their origin in the journalism industry rather than being digital intermediaries?
Not anything that I heard. But what I learned when all this were doing this study was that most of these media companies actually have got, there's this partnership between German companies, Deutsche Welle or something. I don't know how to pronounce the name. But they've got this partnership that they have with media companies and also training organizations. So even most of the people that really are at the forefront of digital online editors, most of them gone to Germany to get some skills around this. So And that's where they are getting their capacity, you know, the capacity building workshops from. So I would think that if ever they are going to get anything or they are going to have partnerships, it's probably with German companies, probably more, is opposed probably to getting that kind of assistance from Norway or other Scandinavian countries.
Good. And one key takeaway from your interesting presentation, apart from that, sort of what I would call divide between proprietary and non-proprietary platforms and infrastructures, is that between online or mobile-oriented analytics and metrics as opposed to the offline world. And that you mentioned the need to measure the other 60% and also doing qualitative research. There have been traditions elsewhere in doing measures through surveys and panel data or focus groups with sort of offline, but is that being done, or is there such a tradition in any of the news organizations you're aware of, and how do they in such case make use of that information?
I would say that I would give you in South Africa there's a very the tradition is so it's inbuilt in the system, and the Advertising Association, they actually does serious audience studies almost every year, and they publish results, and these are taken on board similar to Kenya. But when you come to them, what has happened over the last couple of years is that we used to have what is called SAMS. It's a study which is done by an organization called SAMS. They do these audience studies, but over the last couple of years, given the polarization that has been happening in them, Alpha Media Holdings just pulled out of it and said, no, we are not going to accept these results. They are flawed. The methodology is flawed. They said the way how they come up with it. So because ultimately they were saying, Herald is always on the top in terms of the Herald, which is state-owned. They are always on the top. They are the ones that most people read. Yet it was not like that in terms of what they were selling. So they were saying, we are selling more newspapers compared to this. So why is it that it's always, they are always on top? So we don't accept that. So they started having their own. So they commissioned their own study. So they have, now they have their own parallel study, which goes on and on. So again, this is also the other issues that are also coming before that. Again, in a polarized kind of an environment, again, you have this struggles going on and on. And whether for us to really believe what really Alpha Media is doing on their own is the real thing or not, or what to believe SAMS, but we all know that SAMS somehow, the methodology has not been refined. I think they have been using the same methodology which has been used for the past 50 years, and people are saying, but the media environment has changed. Why is it that you're still measuring? What are you trying to measure really with those kinds of indices that you're using? So those are some of the challenges that are inbuilt within the system.
Yeah, another question there, which I would be curious to know your opinion on, is the growth in audience analytics and metrics has made journalists and editors more aware of their measurable audiences, so to speak, in a more general sense, and kind of adapting to them in different ways. With the offline metrics, or survey-based or telephone interviews, it's my understanding that those types of studies were being done for quite some time and with the industry, but not necessarily too many in the newsrooms were listening or appropriating such knowledge, but perhaps mostly on a managerial level or among the marketeers. And in the cases where they were in the early 2000s trying to diffuse such information to the newsroom, they would need to have an editorial representative that everyone trusted for it to be welcomed by the journalist and to listen to that person and that information. Have you seen any sort of similar movements?
No, not at all. Okay. I haven't seen anything like that of late. Of which, again, I think I agree with what you are saying, that most of these are offline audience studies that we've done. They were just probably being used by the management to think about really strategically how to position their brand or their organization. But ultimately, in terms of influencing the news content, really, how then do we, I think it really didn't go down to the ordinary person in the newsroom to really say, okay, so this is how we're going. I think the way how we are seeing it online, I think it's more refined, and the journalist now has to be part and parcel of the equation. He or she must know how his story is performing, what needs to be done to change it, how can you write, you know, more palatable kinds of news stories that your audiences can actually consume. So I think this big data push really that we are seeing, especially with the adoption of analytics, it's ultimately shifting and shaping journalism in a different direction when compared to the ones that we used to have offline.
And I remember a few journalists in South Africa in the early 2000s using the LSM, the Living Standard Measures, to get an idea about who the audience was. And at that time, it was very much a question of whether they being white or black,
because
the whole structure was changing. And the Living Standard Measure is quite sophisticated. It was offline at the time, but it put the whole, at least the adult population of South Africa into
14, 15 different grades
of living standard. So to be on the top, you would need to have a swimming pool and 2 hours servants, and in the bottom, maybe you would separate between having access to running water and electricity and these things. Well, there were different grades. And I know at least a few journalists in the public service broadcast of SABC who looked at these groupings to get an idea about who is the imagined audience, who am I actually reporting to at that time. But of course, what's happening now is
completely
Do we have time for one more question slash comment?
Yeah, we have a few.
It's rough.
To be honest, look, one of the things, I'm a sports idiot, I really like football and stuff. One of the things you can observe is how the norms of public broadcasters have changed since the introduction of Netflix. For instance, before in the BBC or the Norwegian public broadcasting, there used to be a strong norm of diversity. They had to cover also small sports in equal terms, and even give more priority to small sports than football. But now if you use BBC, for instance, you would find all the sports when you open the page listed alphabetically, except for the biggest one. So football will come first, and then athletics, beginning that. So we can actually see how the norm has adapted to making it more easy for the audience to go directly to the biggest sports.
Yes, exactly.
Have you seen anything like that in your study? How the norms actually are changing?
Of course, especially if it's only that probably. If I had access to it, I would have shown you what really is happening in CNBC Africa, where you pretty much, instead of, as I said, they are a business channel, business news-oriented channel, but now the stories that you get at the top is always politics, and then you'll get. So ultimately, again, in terms of ranking news, in terms of ordering news, in terms of which ones is the most important, ultimately, again, is also being shaped by analytics. So you've got your politics at the top, but then you've got your economic news, what, and especially if you go for very specific news websites like the Herald, for example. Sports, every now, your top stories, you always have a sports story there. You also have politics. So those are the main stories that you always get. So your business, ultimately, because it's one of those things, it's pushed. If you were to redo the page, ultimately probably business news would be at the last pages now, given the way how things are really happening online.
Well, thank you again, Myra, for giving this excellent presentation, and thanks for coming and raising good questions and having a good discussion. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks so much for inviting me.